Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We continue final four segments with Richard Dolan, who has written several very interesting UFO-related books, is writing a book about false flags as a UFO publisher. Why does anyone want to become a UFO book publisher, Richard? Tell me.
I did it as the only, it's the only way that I'm able to figure out how to do this discipline full time, so that I don't have to have like a job working for Xerox. And so that, you know, I don't want to just devote myself to doing this part time, and I had to figure out a way to do it. So as a publisher, so far, modestly, I'm able to make this my primary way of paying my bills. Keeps my head in the game, so to speak. It keeps me on top of some fascinating new authors that I'm actually very proud to be a publisher of. But that's really what it comes down to. When I started doing UFO research back in the early 90s, it was a time-consuming thing, and the only way I was able to do it is that I worked for myself as an independent writer back then. I was writing professional resumes for people. I had left the academic world in at that time, 94, 95. I know how to write. It's something that I've always been able to do well. And I would have people come into my office, and I'd sit down with them, and I'd make them look beautiful on paper within the boundaries of truth. But because I worked for myself, I was able to set my own hours, and I was able to do a tremendous amount of UFO research in that way. But the fact was, I didn't want to write professional resumes for the rest of my life. Good grief. What I wanted to do was throw myself into this field full time. And so I had to figure out, how do I do it? I've always been the kind of person who wants to work for myself. I'm not really good at working for a large company or a small company. I don't want to do that.
Well, you know, the people who do best working for themselves are the kind of people who would be misfits in a big corporation. They'd either be bored to death, or because they're independent thinkers, they get themselves on the wrong side of the relationship with the boss.
That's absolutely me. That fits me to a T. And I've just never been a really good organizational person, and I'm not saying that that makes me better or worse. It just makes it's difficult for me to fit in like that. I've never been able to do that. And I will just add that I took a huge financial hit throughout my entire life because of my decision. I left the academic world because I didn't want to go. I mean, the job market for historians bottomed out in the early 90s, and I don't want to go dragging my family looking for some adjunct position somewhere. I said, the hell with that. And I had a five-minute conversation with myself, literally, whether I wanted to go into corporate America. I was in my early 30s, and after thinking about what my life would be like, I decided I would rather slip my wrists. I just couldn't do it. So that left me very few options, and I supported my family as my kids were growing up on a very meager income, but I was earning my own money, and I would not do it any other way. I'm obsessed with this phenomenon, and I'm obsessed with this topic, and I don't want to be anything other than a writer for the rest of my life.
How many kids do you have?
I have two children. My son is 19. My daughter's almost 17 now.
Okay, so you have college bills.
Yeah, right, I do. That never goes away. The financial hassles never go away. But
well, with the way student loans are now, the loans never go away.
No, it's a horrible, it's a terrible system based on thievery, in my opinion. That's a whole other topic. But for
we
me,
can do another show on that alone.
For me, the only thing professionally that I want to do for the rest of my life is write. Public speaking, doing radio interviews, all of that is secondary. I just want to write. I don't want to dilute my time having to have a job where I have to work for some company which owns my body and soul for a certain number of hours a week. I just can't. I couldn't do it. It would kill me. So the reason I have Richard Dolan publish, Richard Dolan Press, formerly Keyhole Publishing, is that this is it. This is the only way that I can currently think of that will give me a certain level of independence so I can throw myself into this phenomenon with the amount of time that I feel that I want to give it. That if I find a better way in the future, I'll do that.
Yeah, you can start giving workshops and I'll be there.
You've given a lot of authors some very good advice on writing. I feel like this is something that I figured out. Like, how do you actually write a book? How do you organize it? How do you go through the process? And I could give a workshop on that.
Yeah, having a good copy editor is a real good thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let's get to another subject that's kind of initially sort of diverted you from the process of finishing up your third book in the series of UFO and the National Security State, and that was AD, After Disclosure.
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
a question here from Last Laugh, who is a fairly new sign-up at forum.theparacast.com, where you can ask questions of our guests, and he's wondering, what good evidence have you seen that makes you think that something like a breakaway civilization is likely or possible? We were kind of toying around with that subject a little bit by talking about, you know, possible Nazi technology evolving in a covert way. But, you know, I know this subject has fascinated you, and you're one of the few people that really are willing to talk about it. What do you think?
I am fascinated, but well, I coined the phrase breakaway civilization, and other people have taken it up and talk about it. It's out there now. It's part of the currency. It's fascinating to me. It's like watching a little child that you grow up and then just have its own life. I think I've always considered it a hypothesis that I think is a logical hypothesis. There have been a couple of individuals from the classified world who give me good reason to continue promoting it. But the idea of a breakaway civilization, I think, is actually alarmingly simple. We know that, at least in certain areas, the classified world has had certain key advantages over what we might call the white world, the black budget world, over the non-black budget world. And we also know that there are a large number of classified patents. And many of these happen to be in the field of energy, by the way. So there are areas of intellectual effort that are off limits to the public, and that I don't think one can argue against. I went on a couple of and one of the things that triggered my interest in my idea of a breakaway civilization was a conversation I had with a civilian scientist who had done contract work for the National Security Agency in the mid-1960s. And this is a very brilliant man, and I know him very well. One day I'll toss his name out there. I swear I will. But he said to me that NSA computers circa 1965 had a clock speed that he knew of 650 megahertz. Today that's nothing, of course. In 1965, first of all, practically no one had computers. That clock speed was not reached by the consumer market until around the year 2000, which is 35 years later. So on that metric, at the very least, you could say the NSA was 35
well,
years.
Well, that's a frightening statement. I had no idea.
Right. So, and, you know, we hear these types of things coming out, these types of leaked claims coming out. And I think there's enough of them out there that we have to take them quite seriously. So if that's the case, then what if there had been any retrievals of exotic technology in the form of UFOs ever? I believe the answer to that is yes. Let's factor that into the equation then. So I think what would happen is you've got a very very deeply clandestine black budget world where you've got genius-level scientists studying
trillions of dollars missing.
So right.
DOD.
So that's right. So what could they come up with left to their own devices? Advances in our conventional technology? Absolutely. Could they come up with breakthroughs? Sure they could. If they did come up with a breakthrough in energy or in propulsion, they could never be allowed just to leach out to the world. They could not. There goes petroleum. It is such a revolutionary thing. It would be kept classified, but that wouldn't mean that research would stop. So my thinking on this was simply that within the classified world, they would continue this research, keep it held back. Would they then be able to create their own versions of a flying saucer at some point? I think the answer is probably yes. And again, we have a lot of testimony. I mean, I remember reading statements by James Goodall from the mid-1980s. James Goodall was a damn good journalist working Groom Lake back at that time. He developed a number of contacts who said famously, you know, in my opinion, we have things in the Nevada desert that would make George Lucas envious, better than Star Wars, better than Star Trek, anything you see in the movies. This is mid-1980s.
Let's get into more of this in our next segment with Richard Dolan and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, are you tired of dealing with a slow web hosting provider? Well, check out A2 Hosting and their screaming fast Swift server platform. They even have SSDs that load pages 300% faster than the competition. Ready to give your site a speed boost? Well, tell you what, neighbors, head on over to a2hosting.com. That's A2, that's number two, a2hosting.com. Check out their Prime hosting account. And get this, neighbors, they're even giving you an exclusive 25% off discount for all our listeners. 25%. And remember, their Guru Crew support team is standing by 24/7, 365 days a year to answer any of your questions. Now, to get the discount, use the coupon code GENE when you check out.
Usually, the older one gets, the less you are able to absorb amino acids and the less you are able to repair the 100 trillion cells of your body. As a result, you'll have less energy, your tissues will shrink, and you'll become wrinkled. An older person will typically injure more easily and heal more slowly. Not fun. However, if you could consume a protein powder that is easier to absorb, then you may be able to gain back some strength, muscle, and speed of recovery. One World Whey is a highly digestible whey protein powder that may be the perfect answer for you.
My name is Errol. I'm 74 years old. You know, the taste of One World Whey is amazing. I play pickleball, and since taking One World Whey and your trace mineral supplement, I have more energy and recover faster from my working out. I used to take another grass-fed whey protein powder, but now I'm getting much better results using One World Whey.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
By way of research, I was doing a little online research. We're talking about the speeds of computer processors, and he mentioned 600 some odd megahertz. The Intel Pentium 3 with 1 gigahertz premiered in March of 2000. Okay? Yeah. So it was less than a gigahertz before then.
I remember when a 486 was like, whoa, you got a 486?
Yeah, I remember. Well, I did my own research on this at some point, Gene, and I recalled. I don't remember the numbers now, but I remembered concluding it was around 2000 when that number was surpassed. Yeah. So you're just
sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, Apple was using, of course, the PowerPC processor, and around 2000, 2001, they were hitting that range. But it wasn't just the gigahertz, it's the efficiency and how well it works. That's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, there's a lot of other metrics, obviously.
Yeah, oh, yeah, a lot of other metrics indeed.
Yeah, but it's typically on the clock.
40 years ago.
Yeah, that's the big thing. How could we have that when, you know, I had, what, a 25 megahertz processor on a Mac back in, like, what, 1990, and it was fast.
Yeah, me too. I had an SX25, I think, around that time.
We're dating ourselves.
With a dual diskette boot drive, I think, in there. I don't think I had a hard drive initially.
Listen, I remember buying a 100 megabyte hard drive in 1989 for $1,200.
That's amazing.
I remember getting these 5 megabyte hard drives at an office where I worked in the mid 80s, and it cost them like $10,000.
I bought my first computer in 87, had no hard drive. It had a dual diskette, and it was about $1,200. And it was slow. It had an 8 megahertz clock speed.
I've got a thumb drive sitting here in front of me that's got four times that capability in terms of storage space.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just incredible. 25, 30 years.
Let's kind of move on. We're kind of running out of time here.
The breakaway civilization, though, I guess I would just say, I don't have what I would consider to be confirmed proof. And I also, what I would say is that one of the unforeseen things is, I think it's not as far ahead of us as it would be if there were no internet. In other words, if we did not have the web of the last 20 plus years, I think that we would have zero ability to compete with a breakaway civilization. But I don't think that's the case. I think actually the development of the web and development of what we're doing this cast, right, this Paracast right now, and this would not have been possible really without the internet and all of the other types of amazing knowledge that we've been able to develop because we've shared information.
So we're leveling the playing field.
It has, I think, in an unexpected way. It doesn't mean that they're not, the black budget world's not vastly ahead. NSA may have quantum computing right now. It's very possible. But because of the web, because of the transformation of our civilization, it's actually closed that gap, I think, considerably.
It's hard to compete with trillions of dollars in development money. And even Bigelow, in that type of scenario, would be a real small fry. And look at the amount of sort of ability to come up with NASA contracts and pay for R&D and get that foothold into the particular niche that he's decided to try to fill. Do you think something like a Bigelow is just more window dressing, sort of, well, here's how a fairly rich guy can go about having the only known private floating space station? There's some parts of this whole breakaway civilization thing that don't make sense to me. You know, where would we launch?
Well, it depends on what you consider. What is a breakaway civilization? It doesn't have to mean that you've got a base under the ground in Mars or the moon. I mean, it could mean.
Do you think that we have bases on Mars and the moon?
I don't know that we don't have a base on the moon, to be honest. I know this sounds insane, but I.
No, it doesn't sound insane at all to me.
I think it's entirely possible. Mars, I don't know. If you have one on the moon, I don't see why you couldn't have one on Mars, to be honest.
And where are they being launched from? A place like Diego Garcia or some remote South, Pacific Island, or, I mean, some Goldfinger type thing? Is it privatized?
The easiest thing in the world to do it. Well, it would be the easiest thing in the world to do out of some Pacific atoll. The ability to have a.
Is this government or is it private?
Don't know, Chris. I mean, I suspect that the real power is quasi private, quasi government, quasi public. I think that's how it definitely works. Certainly, I don't think it's being run by the president of the United States. So if it's not being run by him, who's doing it? I mean,
right.
It's the guys who put the president into power. You have the top 80th wealthiest people in the world own half as much money as the bottom half of humanity. I'm not saying they're the ones.
Occam's razor.
Yeah, darn, what was I just going to say here? I can't remember.
Well, that. You're talking about whether it's private or government, the actual, how would I put it?
The moon. The one thing about the moon is I've said this many times, and I don't want to belabor it too many, but I've spoken at length numerous times at a conversation I had over a decade ago with Russell Targ, who was one of the scientists that developed the remote viewing program out of SRI with Hal Puthoff.
Been on the show.
And Russell told me on the phone, a long conversation with him on one occasion. He said, Richard, in the early 1980s, I was charged with training remote viewers out of Fort Meade, Maryland, whose job was to remote view the far side of the moon. It's exactly what he said to me. And there was a little bit of a pause. And I said, well, why would they do that, Russell? Because I wanted him to tell me. I didn't want to be the one that blurted out. He said, well, why do you think? So he threw it right back at me. And I said, okay, well, were they looking for E.T. on the backside of the moon? He said, yes, that's what their job was. They were going to look for E.T. on the backside of the moon. I'm not joking, is what he said to me. And I said, did they find E.T.? And he said, well, that wasn't part of my job. I don't know. I will say, and I've always said this, that I believe that he was telling me the truth. And if you've got a program where you've got remote viewers looking for E.T. on the far side of the moon, you're not just going to be doing that on a lark. You're going to have a reason to think that you're going to find E.T. on the far side of the moon. And that tells me that there's a classified component of the U.S. space program, almost certainly, that has to do with the far side of the moon.
What about that strange object on a large asteroid that we've been recording in recent days?
Sirius. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, I'm following it like anybody else. I don't think I have any better insights. It's, you know, you've got astronomers saying it could be ice reflection. It doesn't look like it would be to me, but I don't want to debate these people yet about it. I think it's fascinating. I mean, it's very interesting.
Well, before we get to a couple of other, I think, topics that are going to take a little bit of time, here's a good question from Pagusta, who's doesn't come out and ask questions very often, but you brought him out, or her out, I'm not sure. It talks about disclosure, that the big or little d, depending on how you want to look at it. But do you think it's possible the reason there has been no formal disclosure is the fact that the government or governments pretty much only know that there is something strange going on in our skies, but they can't fully explain it or determine the nature and origin of the phenomenon? They basically have nothing substantial to disclose other than the fact that UFOs seem to exist, but they don't know what they are or where they come from.
Well, this is an argument that was actually very dominant during the 1950s and 60s and through most of the 70s, where, you know, when the government was able to state, you know, point blank, look, it's maybe there's a mystery here, but we don't really know what it is, and we're doing the best we can, and, you know, that's why we had Project Blue Book. The problem with that argument, as I see it anyway, is that once you start getting to the late 1970s and you start getting researchers like Leonard Stringfield, primarily, who start having stories come to him about crash retrievals, about bodies, not just one or two, but dozens and scores of them, and you start getting, you know, other researchers looking into what appear to me, anyway, to be legitimate cases of retrieval of downed UFOs.
Let's do the break here, and we'll find out more about that. And Leonard Stringfield, whom I knew very slightly years ago. Richard Dolan with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Great minds think alike. The network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Have you ever wondered if you could make electric, light, or heat in your home for free? How about a motor that charges batteries at the same time? What if this also restores useless batteries and saves you lots of money? Come to our Renaissance Charge Conference Workshop on August 15th and 16th in Fort Lauderdale. Visit r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-304-2954. 208-304-2954.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
As if chlorine in our water weren't bad enough, now they're adding ammonia?
It's true. Some municipalities are now adding ammonia plus chlorine to your water supply. It's a disinfectant called chloramine. But with a trusted Big Berkey water filter, you can keep chloramine out of your water. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show EPA Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market, the gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one that Analytics powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Honey, it's time for dinner. What are you doing over there on your computer?
I'm shopping for a new wallet. Mine is falling apart. Hey, did you know there's a company called ID Stronghold that makes shielded wallets to prevent electronic pickpocketing?
Oh, I didn't realize there was such a thing as electronic pickpocketing. What is that?
Well, apparently, many of the new credit and debit cards being issued have radio chips inside them called RFID that transmit our banking information to card readers when we pay. Unfortunately, a bad guy can also get one of these readers and go around the city scanning people, collecting their credit card numbers and personal information without us knowing it.
Wow, that sounds scary. Since you're getting a new wallet anyway, you should definitely get an ID Stronghold shielded wallet. Are they more expensive?
No. In fact, I can get a shielded leather wallet from IDStronghold.com for the same price or less than regular unshielded wallets from other stores.
Sounds great. My wallet isn't falling apart yet, but let me pick one out too. I want to be protected, and these wallets at IDStronghold.com look fantastic.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at LegalShield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, LegalShield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to LegalShield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let LegalShield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
This is Micah Hanks of the Grayling Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, all those cases of crash retrievals.
Right. I want to ask this question here. So I personally think that there has been acquisition of technology and probably bodies. And if you got that far along into this, then you can't really just say, oh, well, we've got this mystery and we don't really know what it is. Someone's got some information. Now, what I would say is that it's entirely probable, in my opinion, that the United States president and the formal structure of power is probably not completely in the loop on this. I had a conversation, and again, this is – I don't have a whole – lot of anonymous deep throat contacts, but, and I don't like actually, you know, relying on them in discussion, but I will just say this is an individual who was well known to me and was well known to the world, who was very high up in the U.S. intelligence community. I had a long conversation with this gentleman about this topic. And one thing I said is, how much do presidents know about UFOs or ET or anything like that? And he said, well, some have known more than others. And he made a very basic statement to me. He's an exceptionally intelligent man. That he said, look, presidents come and go. Some of them are not psychologically reliable or stable. Some of them drink. That's what he said. This is when George W. Bush was president during this conversation. And he said, the lifers, they're here to stay. They know that not every president really is a good person to be dealing with on this topic. And by, you know, he said also, look, presidents are public relations. They have to kiss the babies. They have to shake the hands of dignitaries. They have all these other things. And you've got not simply the ET phenomenon. You have a whole array of deeply classified black budget programs that have to be kept away from the president for plausible deniability. And we all know about this. So he said, in fact, that some presidents have known and some have not known. Some have known more than others. So if that being the case, then really what could a president even disclose? Who would be the agency that would have the knowledge to disclose this information?
It feels like the movie Independence Day,
where they have that secret base at Area 51 with the spaceship that had been captured, and the president knew nothing about it.
We have this kind of grade school view, I think, at times when we look at our government and we think,
we dovetail from a conversation about breakaway civilizations that are probably, funded in by the government but administered by the private sector. If we do have that scenario where we have this information and the real juicy stuff is being held by in private hands. I mean, it's out of reach of any sort of government oversight.
I think that's exactly right. And a lot of the funding, I think, is private anyway. You've got a whole narco-trafficking industry, a whole banking fraud industry where this money goes missing. And I don't know for sure where that money goes. I'm not part of that club, but I have to assume.
What do you think about all these stories that have been coming out recently about the elite or preparing for the meltdown and their underground bunkers and their privately owned islands and this sort of thing? Do you think that's all just sensationalism to titillate the more conspiracy-minded of us? Or
I think some of them have
something to it.
I think some of these stories that have leaked out are probably bogus. There was a story that came to Camelot a few years ago about Norwegian member of government who said, Nibiru's coming. I think that was it. And we're expecting, we have to go into our underground bunkers. And I was like, come on, let's get real here. But certainly
one of those today.
they're still talking about this.
Yeah, there was another story like that today.
Really? Oh, God.
It's been debunked.
You'd think that that would be done by now, but all right. I mean, 2012 came and went, but no, I think that those people at the very top of the human pyramid, we have to assume that they've got their emergency plans in order. Of course, they have to, and in the ability to have sophisticated large underground bases, we've had that capability for generations. And the technology to build them, the money to do it, has all been there for decades and decades and decades. And that includes, by the way, under the floors of the oceans. As long as the geology is right, you can do it. All you need is oxygen and you need a source of energy. And if you know how to take oxygen out of the water, which we've been able to do since the 50s, no problem. You have a little source of geothermal or even nuclear, you're good to go. So you could really have a secure base. Well, almost really anywhere.
Well, one of your former authors, Richard Sauter, he spent years combing through every appropriations bill passed by Congress, administration by administration by administration, and could find not a single dime or penny of funding for 127 acknowledged underground facilities.
Exactly right. Yeah, Richard, I just communicated with him recently. I published one of his books, Hidden in Plain Sight, which I think is his best book, honestly. And he's done great work. There's always more work to be done on this, but you're exactly right, Chris. And then, yeah, where did the money go that funded all of these? And then some of the plans that we know were on the table.
Where did the money come from? Yeah, well, they've been building bases. I mean, they the Germans were masters at it, and we appropriated it.
That's right.
Well, here's one. You mentioned that you have a deep throat source. And, from time to time, sources do appear. And it's happened to me. It's happened to most people that really are serious about investigating and researching these, various subjects that we're talking about on the Paracast. But this is another question from Pagusta. He would like to know more about your vetting process that you use when it comes to sources, and what criteria do you have to determine if that source is credible or not? Obviously, looking them in the eye and seeing somebody that's a little bit off kilter, that's always a red flag for me. But in some of these real qualified sources, highly intelligent people, don't want their name out there, but they're either supporting things that you're saying, leading you in a direction. That's often a telltale thing for me. A point of legitimacy is when they don't tell you something, but they suggest maybe you should start looking over here.
Yeah, well, those types of sources are an extremely minimal part of my research. It's very limited. But they've had some explosive things to say to me. So how would I vet someone? A, I have to know who they are. I have to know who the person is. My best sources are famous people themselves. And I'm thinking of two in particular who are exceedingly well-known, not only to myself. One of them is very well known to me. The other is fairly well known to me, and they're both highly public personalities. Not that they're out in front of cameras, but like you could Google them and find out a whole lot of information about these people. So, and I know what their careers have been. A lot of that's public knowledge. So when I get a source like that, and I get to sit down with them alone for like several hours, alone one-on-one, which has been the case at times, yes, I consider that more legitimate than someone who just writes to me an anonymous email. People who write to me anonymous emails, that's happened, are not people whose information I would ever use in a public discussion ever. Like I would just not publish anything like that. I don't think I've ever done that. And I've never incorporated any of those types of statements in any of my writings or public discourses. I don't think I ever have. There have been people who've come up to me at conferences that I've spoken to who have told me about some very bizarre encounters that they have had. People ranging from retired Air Force colonels with PhDs to housewives who never had a career outside the house. And in those cases, like, you know, I take names, information, I find out who they are, and then I just talk with them. And you know, in cases like that,
time often.
Yeah, right. You know, if I'm lucky, I get a half hour.
You know, there's one exception to this rule, though, Richard, and that is the anonymous source that comes forward, and you have not published information about a particular, let's say, sighting or event or sighting wave, and they synchronistically, inadvertently confirm something that you're investigating that has not been published yet. Those I take seriously.
Let's take this seriously, and we'll be back with the final segment with Richard Dolan and Gene and Chris. Richard, you're going to do it this time. You're in
the Paracast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Hey neighbor, what are you doing digging? You had a heart attack last year.
Oh, I know. I was told no more hard labor.
Then why are you digging?
Well, I've been taking ExtendoVite. It's been approved to help my heart.
ExtendoVite? Is that a new drug?
No, not a drug. It's more like an herbal combination made from garlic and cayenne.
Herbal? How can that help?
Well, actually, we've taken herbs for thousands of years, and ExtendoVite is doing the job for me.
Does your doctor know about ExtendoVite?
Yeah, my doctor knows, and he said it seems to be working for you, so don't stop taking it. I feel great taking ExtendoVite. I don't want to stop.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs knows the importance of proper digestion.
Make sure you take a look at the Ultimate Enzyme product. They're made with bile salts and fat digestion enzymes and protein digestion enzymes. And not only do the Ultimate Enzymes give you obvious benefits for digestion, but they can also help keep your blood flowing through your circulatory system. As most of you probably know by now, thick, sludgy, clotting blood is a serious risk factor for heart disease and stroke. Clearly, inappropriate and excessive blood clotting is a major health issue, and thick, sludgy blood is not just about heart health either. Sludgy blood can compromise oxygenation and nutrient delivery to all your cells and tissues and organs, and ultimately lead to almost any health issue you can name.
Concerned about proper digestion and heart health? Order Ultimate Enzymes by calling 866-735-2470. That's 866-735-2470 or on the web at brightsidemed.com. That's brightsidemed.com. Order today.
It's time to build your own emergency food stockpile with the industry leader, My Patriot Supply. Once you try them, you'll know why so many Americans like you have made them part of their emergency preparedness plan. Experience the My Patriot Supply difference today with this unbelievable offer. Right now, a four-week food supply is only $99, and that includes free shipping. That's 50% off the online price. Call 800-274-3070 to claim yours. Limit two per caller while supplies last. This offer isn't available online, so you want to make sure and grab this opportunity to get prepared today. 800-274-3070 to get your four-week food supply for the incredible price of only $99, and it'll be shipped to you completely free. Call 800-274-3070 right now. That's 800-274-3070 to claim yours while supplies last. Don't wait. Call today.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Doesn't he do that?
All right. Did I do good?
Yeah. He's up there with Bryce Stable and
yeah.
Nick Redfern.
Suck on that, bitches.
Alejandro does very well also.
Am I allowed to say that? I thought this was a...
No, I'm not sure, Richard.
So I say the craziest things when I'm alone in my house, but...
Well, that's why you're probably talking to yourself. Because there are people right now in your neighborhood who are just running out screaming,
oh, wait, that guy Dolan is doing it again. Let me out of here.
All right.
What is this show about? I forgot.
We're in the final throws.
Yeah. We
throw
are.
Somewhere. I haven't figured out where.
Suck on this, sucker.
It's always plural, bitches. If you say all bitches, right. That means it's not sexist or misogynist.
Right.
You know, this is going to be a little excessive, folks. Let's try in our remaining 9 minutes or so to deal with a few more listener questions.
Are we recording this now or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, well, don't include any of the things that I just said.
It's too late.
Damn you, Steinberg. I'm a lot more fun off camera, admittedly. Whatever.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. You're in trouble, dude. I guess we just... Oh. But good thing you used the S at the end of the B word.
Go on. We'll listen to questions.
I will. Okay. Eric the Red, again, asked 13 questions, and I think some of them are very, very good. This is one that I think you'll appreciate a lot. And he's wondering about your sense of what the current size and activity of the so-called Invisible College of Academics who are interested in the UFO subject. Of course, Invisible College, I think, was a term that Valet came up with in the 70s, I think, late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
What is its historical trend? First of all, what's the history of this term? And has there been more or less interest over time by these academics? And then he says, in a related way, how often are you contacted by academics who express discreet interest in the topic of UFOs but are afraid to make this interest known publicly? Good question.
Well, let me answer. It is a good question. I don't know if I'm able to answer all of it, to be honest with you. Yeah, Valet coined that phrase in the early 70s, I think. And I get periodic inquiries, correspondence from academicians, many of whom are retired. A high percentage of them are retired academics. So that tells you something right there. They don't feel comfortable writing to me until they don't have any job security worries. That has happened. I had one very interesting academician who contacted me. This is a number of years ago. He told me he was the department chair over at UCLA. So he's not a not insignificant man. And he called actually just to tell me he admired my work. And I was gratified to hear that. And I said, why are you whispering into the phone? And he didn't realize he was whispering, but he had been. And he laughed. He said, oh, well, I guess I don't want my colleagues to be aware that I'm interested in this subject. It wouldn't go very well for me, which, of course, it's the rule in academia. I'll get like a couple of PhDs and academicians, university people each year who will write to me as fans, or actually increasingly now people working on their PhDs, younger people I'm finding are interested and are writing to me about this, which I find encouraging. But I don't know how large this invisible college is. I don't really have my finger on that pulse anymore. I've been out of the academic world myself for a long time. I don't know.
Well, okay, I can appreciate that. Of course, valet, you know, being Mr. Mover and Shaker and Hynek's protege and all that, you know, 50 years ago, mm-hmm. I mean, he was in a much better place to garner that sort of, you know, I think at the time, sort of innocent interest by academia. The environment was a lot different back then than it is now, or when you started getting involved in the late 90s. But
yeah.
This is a really good question, and this is one that I don't think anybody's ever asked me this, and I'd be very interested to get your answer. From your initial encounter with the UFO topic until now, have you undergone any dark night of the soul in trying to reconcile where you think the evidence is pointing with the fact that the majority of our most prestigious scientists and academics presumably reject the UFO subject as a field worthy of study?
Have you found
this alienating or cause for self-doubt? Or
yes, all of that.
Have you ever lain awake at night,
yes,
puzzling,
yes,
over how this bizarre state of, you know, blah,
absolutely,
blah, blah. Is it you that's crazy, or is it the world, basically,
yeah,
as he's saying? Have you ever had that thought?
Absolutely, yes, I have, more than once. And, you know, I mean, it would be foolish and dishonest to say, oh, no, I've never had doubts about any of the things that I've concluded, because I haven't shaken hands with an alien being. I haven't seen a UFO land in front of my house. I've seen, on two occasions, what I think might have been an interesting UFO personally, but that's fairly pedestrian, to be honest with you. So this is the difficulty of this field, which is that you're researching, you're walking this line, and on one side of it is evidence that you acquire, that I've acquired, that many people have acquired through documentation, through sightings, and through testimony and so forth. And some of that's very, very powerful. That's why I'm in this field. I think the declassified documents are extremely powerful. On the other side of it, where I live in a world, we live in a world where there is no official acknowledgement of the reality of this phenomenon, where it is ridiculed, where it's ignored by the established intellectual hierarchy of our society.
It's not a cocktail subject, a cocktail party subject.
And on top of the fact that I personally have not had what I would say is personal interactive proof. So In lieu of that, there's always going to be a area of doubt when you're moving down this path of exploring it. But we have to keep in mind, I mean, my way of resolving it is to remind myself that all explorers of the human past, I mean, every single one, when they're going into the ocean or they're going into a new intellectual path, the fact is that they don't know where they're going to end up either. They're going it's partly based on their knowledge and on their best guess, and partly on an act of faith, a leap of faith, that their reason is taking them into a fertile area of exploration.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. And so you've got
it's human nature to freak out every now and then and say, what am I doing?
Oh, I've done it. You know, and it happened more in the early years than recently. I mean, I've learned to develop a very thick skin being in this field. If you're going to be public in the field of UFO research in any way, you better have a thick skin or don't even bother. So a lot of things that come at me, honestly, like they would have bothered me 15 years ago. They don't even register now. I actually literally don't care about most of it. Intellectually, though, I mean, I went through a number of dark nights of the soul, primarily in terms of reconciling what I thought I knew about the world and what this phenomenon seems to be telling me. And it's shattered and made me reform my own paradigm of reality a number of times since.
Richard Dolan, would you tell our listeners where they can find more of the stuff that you do?
Absolutely. My main website is richarddolanpress.com. That's got my work on there, as well as works of authors that I publish. I'm very proud of those individuals. I have an active Facebook page. I max out with friends, but you can always follow me on Facebook. I have a lot of people there.
I catch them on Facebook. at unopportune times. Richard, come on the show. And he always says yes. Okay, you can find us on Facebook, too. There are two official PowerCast fan clubs. You can't combine them without killing the other, and I'm just reluctant to decide which one gets terminated with extreme prejudice. On Twitter, we're known as the PowerCast. Chris O'Brien has graciously donated a copy of Stalking the Tricksters, the ebook version to give away if you subscribe to the PowerCast Plus for a year or more. What's the PowerCast Plus? Well, go to plus.thepowercast.com to figure out what it's all about. We give you all the instructions there, and you have to take a couple of minutes to read it. It's not as easy as we'd like it to be, but we're working on it. You get the ad-free version of the show, free of 41 minutes of network ads, better quality audio, and we've got one extra thing that we have now called After the PowerCast, a special podcast, sometimes with guests, sometimes with commentaries, only to members of the PowerCast Plus. You get Chris's ebook, Stalking the Tricksters, if you subscribe for 1 year or 5 years. It's not that expensive, really. You know, get a Starbucks coffee and you've paid for those subscriptions in not too much time. Really, seriously. Chris's site is OurStrangePlanet.com. That's OurStrangePlanet.com. You go there, and if you want, you can donate to his San Luis Valley Camera Project to get that thing moving even further along. Been a fun session here. We didn't get to all the questions, believe it or not. Richard Dolan, thanks for joining us on the PowerCast.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure talking with you guys.
The PowerCast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the PowerCast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy. And get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.